Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Boone County National Bank. We know you're in a hurry. That's why we have 16 banks and 23 ATMs all over town. No matter where you are, you'll find a Boone County National Bank to serve all your financial needs. Plus, with online banking, you don't even have to leave home to manage your money. The most convenient bank in town and a friendly smile, too. That's Boone County National Bank. Member FDIC. Visit us in person or online at boonebank.com today.
Welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Stuart Lurie of the Missouri School of Journalism. Lost in the grief over the death of Senator Edward M. Kennedy and the continuing deterioration of the war in Afghanistan or the state of the economy worldwide has been the aftermath of the release of the man convicted of murdering 270 people in December 1988. That was the bombing of the Pan American jet as it was flying over Lockerbie, Scotland. Most of those killed were Americans. A little over 12 years after the plane blew out of the sky, a Dutch court operating under Scottish rules found Abdelbasset Ali Momad Megrahi, a member of the Libyan security forces, guilty of the murders. He was sentenced to 27 years in jail, which works out to a year for every 10 deaths. Last week, the Scottish Justice Secretary, Kenny McCaskill, released Megrahi from jail after serving only 7 years. McCaskill said he was acting on humanitarian grounds because Megrahi, suffering from prostate cancer, had less than 3 months to live. The convicted murderer was returned to Libya, where he received a hero's welcome. McCaskill said he was operating within Scottish law that permitted compassion for dying prisoners with less than 3 months to live. But others think there was a deal between the British government and Libya intended to create conditions for an expansion of British trade with the oil-rich North African country. So, what's the real story? To help us understand it, our guests today are Alessandro Bruno, deputy editor of the North Africa Journal in Toronto, Canada, Peter Greer, Washington editor of the Christian Science Monitor, Martin Fletcher of the Times of London in Tripoli, the capital of Libya, David Maddox, political correspondent of the Scotsman in Edinburgh, Scotland, and Keith Weir, chief correspondent for Reuters in London. David Maddox, you have a story in the Scotsman today saying that Kenny McCaskill did not consult cancer experts when he claimed that Megrahi had less than 3 months to live. That makes it sound as if he may have had an ulterior motive. If he did, what might that have been?
Well, it does. Essentially, the story today, just to get it absolutely right, was saying that the four specialists who were consulted did not actually say that Megrahi had 3 months to live. They said that they couldn't tell one way or the other, and that the only doctor who was willing to say that he had less than 3 months to live was the prison doctor, who was not a specialist at all. The suspicion here is, it's a growing suspicion here, that Kenny McCaskill always intended to release Megrahi and was actually just looking for evidence or people to back him up in a predetermined decision. But where I suspect I may disagree with some of my colleagues in this discussion is that I don't believe it was anything to do with a deal with the British government. And the one reason I don't believe that is that the Scottish Nationalist Administration and the Labour government in London have such a bad relationship that I can't imagine that Gordon Brown, the British Prime Minister, getting on the phone to any minister in the Scottish government and telling him what to do, because the likelihood is, from my experience, that they'd do the reverse and tell us about the intervention from London. So the ulterior motive may simply be that Kenny McCaskill did not believe in the guilt of Mr. Megrahi. And it may just come down to that, although he claimed that he upheld the court's decision. But there's certainly a lot of feeling up in Scotland that actually Megrahi was not guilty.
In the United States, he would have been an officer of the court, and he would have been bound by the court's decision.
Yeah.
Is that not the case in Scotland?
He's not bound by the court's decision, but as Justice Secretary, he has to be seen to be upholding the judicial system in Scotland. If he had raised doubts about the conviction, he would have basically been saying that the judges who firstly convicted Megrahi and then secondly rejected his appeal were not up to the task, and it would really quite undermine the integrity of the Scottish justice system, and I don't think he could afford to do that. The Scottish government, the SNP, don't have many friends as it is, and I don't think they can afford to make too many domestic enemies.
Yeah, Keith Weir, McCaskill claims that he did discuss the situation with Jack Straw, a member of the Gordon Brown cabinet, and that Straw gave him the authority to talk to Megrahi. Was Straw involved in this decision?
I think that Straw was involved in, or Britain, the British government was involved only in so much as there was an agreement, a prisoner transfer agreement signed between Britain and Libya earlier in the year, which gave the Scottish authorities the option of sending Megrahi back under this agreement, where he would have been in prison in Libya. And that was the option which McCaskill in the end decided not to pursue. McCaskill and the Scottish National Government have been very critical of the government in London. Don't forget there's a Labour government in London and there's no love lost between the two parties. They'd be very critical of the way that the British authorities in London kind of opened up this case and then took a safe distance behind it and left it to the Scottish authorities to decide. So that's the kind of position on that.
How much was the British effort to repair relations with Libya, particularly trade relations and economic relations, how much was that involved in all of this?
Well, that's the question we'd all really like answered. And if you listen to what the British government has to say, and we have to believe them, it wasn't involved at all. And it was purely an issue for the Scottish judicial authorities. I don't think, one could be sceptical about this, but ultimately it was a decision taken by McCaskill. It wasn't a decision taken by the Westminster government. So you can't really pin this on the British government and pursuing its aims. What you can possibly accuse the British government of doing, which some critics have, is wanting to have the best of both worlds. They're wanting to have Megrahi home and not having to take any responsibility for the decision. I think that's where, if there is a fault or finger to be pointed, that's where the finger needs to be pointed.
So, in other words, what you're saying is that the British government is not necessarily unhappy that Megrahi has been released and is back in Libya. Martin Fletcher, tell us a little bit about the reaction in Libya and what this means to Muammar Gaddafi and the Libyan place in the world.
Well, most ordinary Libyans are delighted. They never believed he was guilty in the first place. They see Megrahi as a man who sacrificed his own liberty for the sake of the country to get sanctions lifted. So they rejoiced when he came home. As for Gaddafi, I think what it shows is that the power of Libya, the emerging power of Libya, a country with vast oil and gas reserves with billions of dollars to spend, and it can now, dictate is too strong a word, but the Western countries are now seeking its favor. And it's not just the British. At the same time as the Megrahi row was going on, there was a big dispute rumbling between Switzerland and Libya. Last year, Hannibal Gaddafi, the leader's son, was arrested in Geneva and spent 2 days in custody. And ever since, the Libyans have been punishing the Swiss with trade sanctions. And this culminated on the day that Megrahi flew home last Thursday, with the Swiss president flying to Tripoli and issuing a groveling apology. to Libya for what happened to Hannibal Gaddafi. Libya is riding high. It considers both Megrahi and the Swift apology as big victories, as establishing its role on the world stage.
If I can bring Alessandro Bruno into the discussion. Alessandro, how is this action, this release of Megrahi, going to impact as far as Libya's role on the world stage is concerned?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I agree with all the panelists in saying that I don't think the British government really had much of a decision in the release, because the in fact, rumors of a release, I think, can be traced back at least 2 or 3 years. The Scotsman itself published an article in 2006, in August, actually, claiming that there was the police chief in Lockerbie had, noticed some errors in the trial and in the investigation of the Lockerbie incident itself. So there was a possibility of a mistrial or allegation, and in fact, I think in 2008 there were measures taken in Scotland for a possible appeal by Megrahi of the entire conviction. I think by getting rid of Megrahi, Scotland has removed the possibility of that appeal, and at least Megrahi remains guilty in the eyes of the world. Otherwise, the entire Lockerbie case would be reopened. I still think that there's a possibility of that. That said, for Libya, this is, I see it, the culmination of the entire process that began in 1999 when they finally released Megrahi and Fahimi, the two people convicted for Lockerbie, initially convicted. Fahimi was then released in 2001 on lack of evidence. And then the process took another step forward in with the December 2003 announcement of Libya's renouncing weapons of mass destruction. And you will recall that Tony Blair visited Libya. I think he was the first Western leader to actually go to Libya in 2004. And BP and Shell Oil have been in Libya since 2005. So there was no need for the British government to go this far to secure oil and gas contracts, which they already have.
But there were also other economic reasons, weren't there?
Of course.
There's the tourist
there's
industry.
More possibility.
That's,
there's an Italian company called Finmeccanica, which is involved in aerospace and infrastructure, has secured huge contracts lately because of Italy's agreements with compensation for colonial misdemeanor for the colonial past. And I think BAE wants, there's a possibility, you know, lots of military contracts that can be had, equipment to secure the borders, aircraft, all kinds of things. But more importantly, that in Libya itself, there's a tribal element that must be considered too. Both Fahimi, the one that was released, and Megrahi, belong to a tribe called Magariha. And this Magariha tribe is the same as one of Gaddafi's most important collaborators, Abdus Salam al-Jallud. Jallud in the 90s was sidelined, and he opposed the extradition of these two men. And in Libya, tribal relations, particularly in the army, there are factions, are extremely important. I think many of the things that have happened in Libya, including the nurses' trial and all that mess, have some tribal element to it.
Yeah, we'll talk about the nurses' trial in just a second, because I think that that's indicative of what's going on. But first, I want to ask Peter Greer. Release of Megrahi did not go down at all well with the Obama administration, and the president, as a matter of fact, had a comment about how unfortunate it was. But will this have any impact on relations between the United States and the United Kingdom, or on whatever American companies were doing to try to establish themselves in Libya?
Well, my my gut reaction is that on a substantive level going forward, this won't make a huge difference in relations between the U.S. and the United Kingdom. I mean, the U.S. and the United Kingdom have a far more developed and strong relation, you know, that a small event like this won't really make that much difference. I think the more interesting thing is what it holds for U.S. and Libyan relations, which, of course, have been developing on an uneven yet somewhat interesting line. And as you know, Colonel Gaddafi is now scheduled to come and address the UN, and I think that will be a very interesting development, and it'll be, I think we've yet to see how the Obama administration is going to react to that.
Yeah, I think Gaddafi was planning to stay in Englewood, New Jersey, and now there is a move in New Jersey to ban him from the state.
Well, you know, and I think the reason for that, at one point I would like to bring up, the panelists have all brought out the very interesting fact that there are different views as to the guilt, the original guilt. You know, if there is an original sin here, it is that in the United States, many people believe that he was guilty, and overseas there's much more, there's a much more subtle sort of opinion about that. But also in the United States, this has eerie echoes of 9/11 in the sense that it was an attack in which many Americans were killed. There are victims groups or survivors groups, the surviving family members, which in many ways sort of define the nation's emotional reaction to the event. They were given a lot of airtime and a lot of media play in the immediate days after the release. So there you have that kind of overlay, which makes it much more difficult for any administration to be anything but utterly opposed to these developments.
Gaddafi, I think, was banking on the belief that the release of Megrahi would help improve his reputation and his image around the world, and it seems to be working the other way. Martin Fletcher, has there been anything from Gaddafi since the release that indicates that he knows that a mistake may have been made?
None at all, no. He's thanked Gordon Brown. He's thanked the Scottish government. He's kept quite a low profile. I'm in Tripoli. We're all trying to get to him or to save Gaddafi, his son, but without success. There's very little expression of regret about the rapturous homecoming. On the contrary, they say it wasn't a rapturous homecoming. It was standard Libyan custom that you turn out to greet a member of your family who has been away for 10 years. They can't quite understand what the fuss is about. They think it would have been unthinkable not to turn up to the airport and greet him on his return.
Okay. I want to get into the matter of... Somebody has something to say?
I was just going to add that neither Gaddafi nor any of his ministers, except the minister who flew back with Megrahi, appeared at the airport. I think that homecoming reception was rather overdone in the Western media.
Okay. I want to continue to discuss Libya's economic place in the world. But first, I have to say that this is Global Journalist. I'm Stuart Lurie. Our guests today are Keith Weir, chief correspondent of Reuters in London, David Maddox, political correspondent of The Scotsman in Edinburgh, Martin Fletcher of The Times of London in Tripoli, Peter Greer, Washington editor of the Christian Science Monitor, and Alessandro Bruno, deputy editor of the North Africa Journal in Toronto, Canada. You may listen to this program again, ask questions, or make comments by going to www.globaljournalist.org, and at that site you can download the program for podcast at your convenience. We have talked somewhat about the importance of Libya in the world. One of the things, of course, is Libyan oil, and now that there is some question in Europe about the continued flow of energy from Russia, that Libyan oil and natural gas will be more important in Europe. Is that why the European countries are not reacting as harshly to this release as they might have been? Martin, can you handle that?
Well, I think we're all looking for a deal. We're all searching around for a piece of paper that says in return for Megrahi's release, the Libyans will grant Britain this trade benefit or that trade advantage or this contract. Doesn't need to be as explicit as that. Everyone knows the score. If you play along with the Libyans, you get good deals. They have loads of money to spend. If you don't, like the Swiss did, you get punished to such an extent that the Swiss had to issue the public apologies I was talking about last week. I mean, I don't think it needs writing down on a piece of paper anywhere. It's the only deal I think that might have been struck was with Megrahi. If he dropped his appeal, Scots would let him home, because I agree with one of the earlier speakers. I think the last thing that the Scottish government wanted was an appeal that could show that there had been a very serious miscarriage of justice.
Yes, I'd quite like to come in on that. David Maddox here, I'm a Scotsman. There's a strong suspicion about that, because there was a second appeal ongoing, and there's a strong suspicion about what happened around that. In terms of Mr. McCaskill's personal visit to Mr. Megrahi, which needn't have taken place. I mean, the suspicion here is that a deal was struck there for Megrahi to drop his appeal and then be released on compassionate grounds, partly to maintain the integrity of the Scottish judicial system. So there was a strong suggestion that he may well have been successful in that second appeal, and there may well have been some very embarrassing facts which came out. There's a great deal of dissatisfaction in Scotland, and in fact, throughout Britain, especially with families involved, families of the victims involved, but that second appeal didn't go ahead because that was probably the last best chance to find out the truth of what happened in the run-up to that dreadful event.
Keith Weir, there had been a visit by the Duke of York, Prince Andrew, scheduled for Libya. Is that visit going to go ahead?
No, that visit isn't going to go ahead. The visit was tentatively scheduled for next month. The Duke of York, one of the sons of Queen Elizabeth, has a kind of globe-trotting ambassador's role, trying to whip up business for Britain, and he was due to go to Tripoli next month, but now he won't be going given this. Of course, as ever, there's a deniability in this, because you speak to the authorities in the UK and say, well, the trip was never quite finalised, etc., etc. But as other correspondents have said, that there is no kind of paper trail on this kind of thing. It's just the way that business is done with Libya and with the Libyan authorities. But that visit will not go ahead now.
Yeah. Muammar Gaddafi has been working very hard to rehabilitate his image around the world. Before we said that this would not harm him in any way, but talk a little bit, if you would, Martin, about what Gaddafi has been doing to improve his image.
Well, he's been doing the things we all know about. He's abandoned his weapons of mass destruction. He's renounced terrorism. He's paid compensation to the Lockerbie victims, all of which has undoubtedly burnished his image in the world. But once you come to Tripoli, you realize that this is still, and I think it's important people don't forget this, this is still quite a repressive police state. People are terrified of talking about Gaddafi. You will not hear a Libyan utter a word of criticism about him, even in the privacy of a car. We, as journalists, are tailed around the city. We're watched. Gaddafi brooks no opposition. I mean, people shouldn't get carried away with the idea that suddenly this is a wonderful country. Especially, they shouldn't get carried away with that idea next week when the world is invited to his 40th anniversary celebrations. It's going to be an extravaganza, a spectacular on a scale that Libya has never launched before, with the explicit aim of burnishing Libya's image in the world, of showing that it has returned to the international mainstream. But this is not a democracy. It's not a country that most people in the West would want to live in.
The last such extravaganza that I remember like that was for the Shah of Iran. And after that extravaganza, he did not last very long.
He'll, He lasted 7 years. That was 1970.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 2000th anniversary. Yeah.
There is no chance that anything like that will happen in Libya, I don't think.
I don't think there is the slightest chance, no.
No.
Yeah. Peter Greer, tell us a little bit, if you would, about whether or not the United States is going to participate in that big event next week.
Well, I think that the United States really has little choice but to not participate in that event. You must remember that Colonel Gaddafi, in some ways in the United States, remains a prisoner of his own past previous success, when he, in essence, defined a previous era of international terrorism. He certainly made many actions since then that in his attempt to change that, and there's some recognition of that at the high levels of the U.S. government. But in the popular mind, he's still a kind of, you know, emeritus senior director of the world terrorist armies. And so in that sense, any U.S. president, Barack Obama not accepted, would really be forced to keep him at some length.
You say he is the senior director. Do you think he outranks, the Al-Qaeda leader?
Director emeritus, that means the somewhat semi-retired. No, obviously I mean that in jest, but and that was people forget that era now when the era of sort of a secular Arab terrorism in its own way. But, I think that that's the image that is really he still holds in the United States. You saw that with the reaction, I said, of the groups that have been formed of the family members of the victims of Pan Am. And that's really what's driving the debate here.
Of course, I was talking about Osama bin Laden before. It excused the lapse. Alessandro Bruno, do you think that Gaddafi is a director of terrorism emeritus, or is he still involved in the worldwide terrorist operations?
If I had that information, I would be working for the CIA. But I will say this. Gaddafi was no doubt the bin Laden of the 80s and 90s. That was his image. I'm not talking about in real fact. In image terms, in the United States, you remember Ronald Reagan called him the mad dog of the Middle East. He was a very convenient target. And I think that's part of the problem in the U.S. with the Lockerbie trial, and no amount of evidence will ever shake Libya from that crime, even if it comes out that they didn't do it.
Right. Alessandro, I'm sorry, I do have to cut you off. We are out of time. As important as the sense of compassion is, I think that we have to say that the deterrence factor is also a strong component in criminal punishment. So the question is, will the release of Abdelhassan Megrahi encourage more such terrorism? Our guests today have been Peter Greer of the Christian Science Monitor in Washington, David Maddox of the Scotsman in Edinburgh, Keith Weir of Reuters in London, and Alessandro Bruno, deputy editor of the North Africa Journal in Toronto, Canada, and Martin Fletcher of the Times of London in Tripoli. Our director is Pat Akers. Our producers, Jared Gasson, Brian Jarvis, Liz Lance, Anando Sahu, Melissa Ulbricht, and Megan Wiegand. Our transcriber is Pat Kelly. For all, I'm Stuart Lurie, global journalist. We'll be back next week.